I arrive at Loughborough Asylum, where I am met by the acting medical director. He stands in the checkered entry hall, staring at his pocket watch. He is an older man, self-serious and stodgy, with frown lines and a deep purple scar running across his neck. A scar which, the director tells me, you gave him on the day you were committed. I ask why you attacked him, and the director shrugs. I rephrase the question and instead ask what reason you gave for this naked violence. The director is silent for a time. Then he tells me you accused him of having bad manners just before you tried to cut his throat with a shard of mirror. I take out my notepad and add this to a catalogue of your misdeeds. The director notices that my study has been quite thorough. He leans closer to inspect my newspaper clippings about you, headlines of your transfers between towns and asylums, but I snap my notepad shut and smile. The director shakes his head and he begins the orientation. Our tour of the asylum is extensive and, at the same time, rather incomplete. Here is the shell shock ward, where heroes of the Great War are kept in padded rooms. I'm not allowed to go there. Here is the operating theatre, where violent men are made docile by surgical means. I'm not allowed to go there either. Here is the common room, where patients play games, and where your last female doctor was brutally, publicly violated. Of course, I'm not allowed to go there. Frustrated, I ask where I'm to see my patients. The director gives me a patronizing look. He tells me I'm to be given one office and one patient. You are to be my sole focus. You are my mission and my reason for being here. I try not to look pleased by this. I'm led to my new office and sat down like a child in detention. I'm given your official file and a lamp to study by, since the storm might compromise the power, and here I am left on my own to peruse your wrongdoings. It's very impressive, your file. It reads like a heroic novel in reverse. Decorated war hero, trench fighter, injured, shell-shocked, gassed, and sent home to recover. Unsuccessfully. You see, while the trauma of other shell-shocked soldiers usually manifests in violent outbursts or bouts of fear, yours has taken a darker turn. Sexual compulsion. Sexual deviancy. And acts of public sexual debauchery. Your last doctor writes that you had a primal, irresistible magnetism about you, which she endeavoured to stifle with drugs. She thought by putting you on psychotropics and hallucinogens, your misplaced frustration, she calls it, would be directed internally to your mind, instead of externally to your penis. She was wrong. Your last doctor saw no improvement in your behaviour. In fact, she writes, you became more brazen in your sexual deviancy. This excited and scared her. So she increased your dose, dangerously, thinking the drugs were ineffective or that you were spitting them out. In her last entry, she writes that she planned to follow you into the common room to discover how you'd been disposing of your meds. This is where her report ends, and the director's investigation begins. You weren't skipping your doses, the director determined. In fact, you were taking them, and they were very potent. Too potent. He writes that when you caught your doctor, you forced her to swallow your dose, among other things. Then you waited for the hallucinations to begin before you convinced her to strip naked for everyone in the common room and play with herself. Afterwards, you fucked her multiple times. When she was at the height of her delirium, you took her from behind. You took her and came inside her while she could hear the guards outside yelling for her, pounding on the safety gate. That's when she began convulsing. I don't know if your doctor's heart attack and her rush to the hospital was the purpose of your game. Your doctor certainly thought it was, since she refused to return to work. I suspect including this report in your file was the director's way of scaring me. It worked. As I study this, I feel my heart racing. I bite my lip, and I slip a hand down my skirt into my underwear, and I reread everything, just to be thorough. When the orderlies bring you to my office, you are in a straitjacket. You are lucid and sharp and painfully attractive. As your last doctor mentioned, you have an undeniable magnetism. The orderlies sit you on the sofa. Then they exit, leaving the two of us alone. I compose myself, shuffling papers and checking my notes, and I pretend not to notice how you devour me with your eyes. You have an openness to your stare, an innocence. Your eyes are wide and you're smiling as you take in my heels, my smooth stockings, my tight pencil skirt. Your eyes trail up my buttoned blouse, undone to my lacy black bra, and you linger on my collarbone, my bowed mouth, my tied back hair. Finally, you look me in the eyes and make a simple demand. Tell me you're a good girl. That phrase makes me shiver. Flustered, I rise, adopting a disciplinarian stance. You seem amused by this. You're like a child, happy for any attention whatsoever. I explain the gravity of your situation. I tell you that I'm your last chance, your only hope for salvation. I tell you that with my expertise, we might save you from electric shocks or ice baths or a lobotomy. And if you enjoy being you mentally, then you should do everything I say and take our sessions very, very seriously. I pause, looking down at you, and notice that your hands aren't in the straitjacket sleeves. They are below the jacket, where it's unbuckled, and you're touching yourself, slowly stroking your cock up and down while I lecture, staring me in the eyes. I should scream for the orderlies. You're a danger, a killer, a man who seems impervious to medication. And yet I can't take my eyes off you. As you open the straitjacket with one hand and tease your perfect cock with the other. You're not taking this seriously, I tell you. On the contrary, you say, I'm taking you very seriously. You stand, shrugging the jacket off like a snake skin, and your trousers drop. For any other man, this would look comical or vulnerable. But you make it look like an animal returning to its natural state. You approach me, your hands at your sides, your cock is straight out, slick and ready. I freeze like a deer, and you circle me. I am preparing myself to be brutalized, to become your next victim. You stand behind me. I feel your hands on my shoulders and your cock pressing between my legs, lifting my skirt. You whisper, "Are you my good girl? Tell me before the lights go out, and I'll give you what you want." "Yes, I want to say, I am your good girl. Please fuck me. I want your beautiful cock inside me. I want to taste you, to bend to your passion. I want you to claim me." But I bite my lip and say nothing. I stand mute and vulnerable. The storm outside rages. The light bulb in the ceiling hums. You inhale, breathing in the scent of me. I hear a sudden crash and a pop. The electricity goes out. And when the room is plunged into shadows, I feel your warmth slip away from me. I stand there, wet and waiting. And you are gone in the dark. The authorities capture you 3 days later. When you're returned to the asylum, you're put on the shortlist for surgery. They want you docile, tame. They decide to give you a lobotomy. I argue on your behalf. I submit requests to the director and to the state board, pleading, begging them for more time. We never got a chance to begin treatment. It's not fair. I am denied. I'm ordered to supervise you before the surgery, to report on your mental state before they scramble your prefrontal lobe like an egg. And then I will be asked to leave the asylum forever, to drive back to the central medical facility and resume my duties there, as if nothing ever happened. The room I'm escorted to is a concrete waiting cell with two doors and no windows. It's built to capture sound, to muffle frantic screams as patients wait to be taken to the operating theatre. When I see you here, you don't appear the least bit bothered. In fact, when I arrive, you look like the cat who got the cream. You're smiling, naked, strapped to a rolling metal table. But the moment you see me enter with my clipboard, your cock begins to rise. I can see it pulsing with your heartbeat. I stand at your side, taking notes, and I can't help staring at your erection. I try to convince you of the seriousness of the situation. I tell you what the doctors will do to your brain. I tell you what you'll be like after, how your personality will change. I ask you if you'd like to say something for posterity while you can still speak. But again, you are amused by my tone. You wink. "Touch it," you tell me. "I can't. I won't. I'm a professional, a practicing doctor in a field dominated by men. I'm about to say so, but my hand is already drifting over your naked skin, and I grip you. You're hard and thick and hot in my hand, and I begin to stroke you almost automatically. You moan and purse your lips. I love seeing pleasure in your eyes. I love how your cock feels in my grasp, how your veins pulse beneath my fingertips. I feel the wetness of pre-cum under my thumb and I bend down, smelling your skin, your musk. I can't help myself. Alone, this close to you, I take you in my mouth. I run my tongue around your cock head, making it slick, and I begin to bob my head up and down. I pull a few stray hairs behind my ears, and I stare up at you through my glasses. You grin like the Cheshire Cat, and I hear you whisper something, but I can't quite make out the words. I take you out of my mouth and I move closer. What? I ask. You repeat yourself, louder this time. Tell me you're my good girl. I lick my lips. I scan the blank walls, the locked doors. I can't help the words that come spilling out. I'm your good girl, I mumble. You arch your eyebrow and turn your head, listening, as if you didn't hear me. So I say it again. I'm your good girl. I shiver as if I've been exercised, and I say it again, even louder. I'm your good girl. I'm your good girl. Please let me be your good girl. You grin. You lay your head back on the metal table, and you wait. I'm frustrated, confused. I thought I told you what you wanted to hear. I'm about to ask, but that's when it happens again. Another crash, a loud pop, and the lights go out. We are plunged into darkness. I hear the restraints slip from you, and the loose buckles rattling. Suddenly your hands are on me. You're kneeling on top of the table and you've taken me by the head, pulling me down on my back. I flail by instinct, but in the dark I am helpless and uncoordinated. I feel a strap tightening over my neck, not enough to choke me, but enough to hold me against the metal. Then I feel you grasp my wrists and you lower your cock into my mouth while you hold my arms up. The position you've put me in is shocking and efficient. I am standing with my back on the table and my neck tied down. As you thrust yourself into my throat, I gag, shaking, and you hold my wrists up. I am forced to support my weight on my heels while you use my face like a toy. I gasp and choke in the dark. I feel the strap tighten against my throat whenever you ram yourself down my esophagus, and any time I jerk away from you or resist, you pull up on my arms and I feel the strap tighten. The room is pitch black, but I see flashes as you fuck my face. I try desperately to keep my feet under me so I don't trip and hang myself with the strap. You moan in pleasure as the table gyrates and my clumsy steps propel us across the room. Please come, I think to myself. Please end this quickly and just come down my throat. But you don't. I hear you panting. I feel your cock twitch in my mouth. But you don't come. You pull it out and you leap from the table. I gasp and I see sparks as the air returns to my lungs. I reach for the strap, but I don't try to untie myself. Instead, I hold on. It never occurs to me to fight you. After all, I'm your good girl. I feel your mouth on my pussy, and you begin to make a dessert of me. I feel you licking and sucking, and I feel your fingers enter me. Then your hand slides up my body, and you force your fingers into my mouth, and I taste myself. You laugh with your mouth over my clit, and I feel the vibration of it. I moan. My legs go weak. When my legs sag, the table rolls back, and the strap across my neck pulls taut, and I hear your laughter. Next, I feel your hands under my knees, lifting me, and I cough and splutter. You squeeze my legs, fingers sliding over my stockings, and I feel your cock twitch against my pussy lips, teasing me. I hear you whisper, "Say it." I inhale, and I can barely get the words past my throat. I'm your good girl. You enter me, hard and needy. I feel myself stretching to accommodate you. You begin thrusting, forcing my body to bow between you and the table, and soon I am panting in short, broken gasps. The table shudders under my shoulders until you back it against the wall and you bend me, fucking me like a bowed wishbone. "Please, please, please," I gasp. You can't see it in the dark, but my eyes are rolling behind my glasses and my toes are curled. I cling to the table legs. "Please, I'm your good girl." Your hands slide higher, cupping my thighs, my hips. You lean over me, causing me to strain further, nibbling, licking, tasting my flesh as you take me. In my backward arched position, I begin to shake violently, even with your support. You thrust harder and faster. You peck and bite and lick. I feel you tensing, getting ready to climax, and I quiver at the thought of relief. Again, I hear you whisper, "What do you want?" I feel tears in my eyes, then my body is quaking violently. "I want you to come," I say. "Please, I can't take any more. Please come inside me. Come inside you, good girl. Make me yours." Your hands tighten on my hips and you drive yourself into me over and over. I squirm and I climax first, seeing stars in the dark as I lose my grip on the table. My body goes limp, shuddering. You lift me as you empty yourself into me and your heat fills me up. You twitch and gasp. And you're leaning over me again, bending me near to breaking. Your whiskers scrape over my neck and I feel you fiddling with the straps. You release me and I collapse onto the floor in a heap. I lay, panting, as I hear you mount the table, naked and sweaty. The buckles clatter, straps slide over the metal. When the lights come back on, you are on the table, fastened down and smiling. I've barely regained my feet and pulled my skirt down when the doors open. The orderlies wheel you into the operating theatre and they shut the door. I feel my heart turn heavy and cold. I wait a few minutes. Then I return to my office to collect my things. As I walk out the front door, I feel your seed running down my thigh, and I quicken my pace to the car. It's raining outside. The lights in the car park flicker. I unlock my car and sit in the driver's side, listening to the drum of the storm on the canopy. I lean my forehead against the steering wheel, and I shudder. Then I hear the soft click of the passenger door and the car tilts as someone slides into the back. I put my key in the ignition and start the engine. Then I hear you lean forward and whisper into my ear, "Tell me."